Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to this episode of Tech Cars Machines. My name is Ali Tabibian. I'm with GTK Partners, and you can find out more about me and the firm via the links in the episode notes. Today, we have an exciting addition to our technology and machines theme. Our guest is Alicia Green, who is the General Manager of Upstream Information Technology for Chevron. Now, in Chevron parlance, that means the Chief Information Officer for the very important upstream business. Alicia has been a friend of our firm for some time now. She's spoken at some of our conferences, and I was recently a panelist at a big data and analytics conference for energy executives that Alicia was hosting in Las Vegas earlier this year. The interview itself offers a fair bit of explanation on Alicia's background and the business unit and operations of Chevron. So I won't do what I frequently do here, which is provide 2 or 3 minutes of color. But while I was reviewing the interview for editing, I was struck, really, once again, if you've listened to some of our other episodes that involve large companies, how large an industrial business can be in general, and specifically in the case of energy companies, how geographically diverse they are, and how that diversity directly shapes the careers of the executives. Compare Alicia's geographical assignments that you'll hear about in this episode to what's very typical in my industry of finance. For example, Jamie Dimon, who's the chief executive of JPMorgan Chase, the largest bank in this country, has spent his entire career in New York with a few years in Chicago, and he's probably close to 15 years more tenured than Alicia. A quick few facts to demonstrate the scale point. Chevron last year had revenues of $150 billion, and its recent peak was $220 billion a year of revenues in 2013 when oil prices were higher. Each year, the company spends about $15 to $20 billion on capital expenditures, and that helps it extract, at least last year, extracted 2.7 million barrels a day of oil. Just to give you a point of comparison, each of China, Iran, and Iraq produce about 4 million barrels a day. By the way, that business of extracting oil from the ground is called the upstream operation. And these days, the upstream operations are not only the big offshore or onshore operations with a single giant drill going down into the earth, but also a lot of short cycle, high return operations, which are sort of more diffuse in their number of drilling points. And that's been brought about because of the progress in the world of fracking. The business of actually selling the fuel and other petroleum products is called the downstream business, just in case you hear the term during the podcast episode. Without further ado, here's Alicia Green, General Manager of Upstream Information Technology at Chevron.
Tech, cars, machines. Subscribe here or at gtkpartners.com.
Alicia Green, thank you so much for agreeing to be on our podcast today. We really appreciate your time.
I'm happy to be here.
Great. And today we're actually in San Ramon, which is Chevron's headquarters just north of San Francisco. You used to be here for a few years, I think, and then you left us and went to Houston. And so I'm happy that we managed to catch you on a day when you're back at headquarters. Alicia, maybe give us a little bit of your personal history. I sort of joked around with you a little while ago that you've got a unique, for these days, LinkedIn profile with one company name on it. So give us a sense of what that means, because I know this is much more than really one company, one logo.
Yeah, no, very true. So I have been with Chevron just about 27 years, which is a bit unheard of these days. I've had many different roles in the company. So I started with the company right out of school and in programming, and was in the what we call the downstream piece of our business. And that piece is defined as the part that goes from our manufacturing plants through our terminals into our gas stations. And so I had responsibility for supporting various applications in the scheduling area, scheduling vessels and pipelines with refined product. And so I've done numerous IT type roles, programming, project management, business analysis. I've also done business roles. I've been a refined product scheduler, been a business development and planning manager, and then really spanned the entirety of our value chain. So from downstream to midstream to upstream. Our midstream really is that connection point with our pipeline company, power and shipping company. And then the upstream is where we look for, find, and then produce oil and gas. And I have moved around quite a bit. So yeah, I started here in California. been in Houston, in New Orleans, in Bangkok. Now I'm like on my second loop. So I was in, which is previously was in California. Now I've just, since the beginning of year, have moved to Houston.
You already gave us a little bit of the upstream, midstream, downstream designations. Take us a little bit further into the asset and geographic scopes and the personnel and activities of your current responsibility.
Yeah, so my current responsibility, I am a general manager of IT for our upstream business. And as I said, that's the part that looks for, finds, and produces oil and gas. And so we have business units around the world. We have four different regions. You know, we have a North America region, we have an Africa, Latin America region, Asia Pacific, and Europe, Eurasia, and Middle East. And so the way that it's organized is geographical. Mm-hmm. And so each of those business units is doing that upstream business, but just in a different basin. And so you have both geographical difference as well as geologic difference. So it's whether, you know, our operations are what we call onshore, like you'd have like in the San Joaquin Valley here in Southern California, or it could be offshore, like we have in the Gulf of Thailand in Bangkok. And so there are various functional disciplines. We've got, you know, drilling disciplines. We have the geological disciplines, operational disciplines. So the similar functional disciplines that are in those business units, they just get carried out in various location and also geopolitical differences as well across the world. And so then there the IT that's associated with all of those varying business units, I have the responsibility for the oversight.
On a global basis.
On a global basis.
And GM of IT, I think, is the way you, the phrase you use. That, is that equivalent to what other companies will call a CIO for the upstream business?
That is correct. So then I have peers, you know, for downstream and then the midstream area. And we have a portfolio, you know, as we look at our overall portfolio from a Chevron perspective, we are in different bases, different basins, different asset class. And so there's a strategic look that we take to determine what the investment is in each of those areas. And so, yeah, we don't invest evenly across, but we do have a, you know, what we consider to be a very advantaged and diverse portfolio.
What are the revenues or the capital spending of the upstream business? How many employees you have that work for you? What is the capital that's deployed when you go build an offshore platform or an onshore facility? Just kind of wow us a bit, Alicia, with those numbers, whatever's available off the top of your head.
Yeah, so I guess, so from a scale size, from an upstream perspective, we spend, and this is just total, not an IT, you know, total kind of capital spend where we are right now is probably in the, you know, kind of like the high teens of the billions. So just leave it, leave it there.
That's right.
And that's per year. So, so yes. And, you know, from a IT standpoint, I think there's probably about somewhere in the probably 1,000 to 1,200 range of IT employees that I have across the world. That are working on upstream. And, you know, you talked about, you know, our upstream projects are long-term projects. And so, again, our what we call our major capital projects, they are, again, if you're talking about the life of a major capital project, can range anywhere from, you know, $10 to $40 billion. And then over, and it takes a while, you know, because some of this stuff, it is, I mean, it's an engineering feat to, you know, go put a offshore platform, you know, out 100 miles out, say, or more, you know, in the Gulf of Mexico, you know, in 7,000 feet of water, and then drill, you know, down even more thousands of feet. And so that takes us a little while. And so, you know, when you talk about our projects from, we talk of them in, you know, from our exploration all the way through to, you know, it being on production, that could potentially be a decade.
Wow, that's incredible. And, and you know, it's interesting because people typically, and Chevron's been a public company for a long, long time, and people like to, there's a trope that public companies are short-term oriented every quarter. And it's just not the case for a very large number of the businesses out there. And you know, Chevron and oil and gas is a great example of what the durations are.
Well, we do have a bit more of a diversified portfolio now, and it's what we talked about with the unconventional. So the unconventional's much more of short cycle. And so we have put that into our portfolio. So we do have the short cycle, and then it balances with these longer cycle.
Great. Great. And then from an IT perspective, especially since you've been in other parts of the business as well, does the IT associated with the upstream business have a particular character that you can give it? Or is it so diverse that you've got a little bit of everything in the IT infrastructure? Or is it a little bit different from what it would be, let's say, for the pipeline business?
I think that the true infrastructure is quite similar. You know, when we talk about, you know, being able to have connectivity, you know, the difference between having, say, connectivity in an office versus in a field location, that field location connectivity is very similar whether you're in upstream, midstream, or downstream, because, you know, where we operate are usually in places that don't necessarily have, you know, a lot of connectivity because you're not necessarily near your people. So in that way, that piece is similar. I think where you get into the variety would be more in the application space and the applications that are supporting the different functions. And so the functions are quite different within upstream versus a downstream or a midstream. Some are similar, but say, for instance, the geological function that is very specific to upstream. And so the type of IT applications there are really helping our geoscientists really interpret, you know, seismic imaging so that we can find, you know, where there is oil and gas. And so it's a marrying of very complex, you know, like geophysical models with visualization, you know, techniques, some in 3D, to really help those geoscientists do their work and analysis, would be one example.
Okay, great. Now, in my mind's eye, when I think about, let's say, the downstream business, which I'll kind of say is the part that kind of gets you to the gas stations, that, as you mentioned, is essentially the whole point of it is getting to the oil to where the population is.
Yes.
Therefore, connectivity, all these things, availability of electricity even, right, is a little bit more easier to come by. But a lot of your assets, presumably, you know, people aren't drilling for oil in the middle of Manhattan. So you start with essentially building all your own infrastructure from the ground up. And so that's one of the interesting things we'll keep in mind as we go along here, that you do deal with a lot of, when things like connectivity and power are scarce or at least expensive, it makes people think a lot differently about how much censoring and how much information and where do you call the information before you start transmitting it. And that's pretty interesting.
Well, and it becomes an enabler to that or a barrier to being able to do some of that. That if you're out kind of in a remote location and you do not have the connectivity, then how do you get, you know, some of that, the sensor data actually, you know, back to, say, the mothership.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think another interesting thing that, if I recall correctly, from the exploration side, which is what a part of the upstream business is that unlike a lot of other assets, operating assets, which generate essentially time series data, every now and then they report something, the sonograms, essentially, that they perform generate staggering amounts of information episodically and instantaneously when they do the science. Is that still the case?
That is still the case. So very large data sets. We, you know, terabytes, petabytes, and very, you know, very graphically intensive. Mm-hmm. And so the need to have high performance computing to allow the analysis of that dense data is very much something that is a necessity and that we've worked, you know, over time.
Well, it's fascinating. So for your portfolio essentially is satisfy that scientist who wants to crunch petabytes of data instantaneously, needless to say, versus somebody on the operating side who basically wants a few bits of information that tells them whether I'm exaggerating, a conveyor belt is about to break.
Yes. So, there is definitely diversity in the range, yes.
Okay, great. Alicia, one of the things when we've had a couple representatives from Chevron speak at our conferences over the last few years, that always striking to me is how much the word safety shows up immediately when you ask about the objectives. So talk to us a little bit about the integration of the IT infrastructure, the interaction of the IT infrastructure with safety and sort of other sort of compliance-related items, whatever you find interesting.
Yeah, I think in our industry, safety is the first and, you know, foremost value that we have. You know, we take it very seriously that we want to protect, you know, not only, you know, our employees and contractors who are doing the work for Chevron, also making sure that we are operating in a way that protects, you know, the environment and the communities and, you know, where we work. So we are very, you know, methodical when it comes to that. And I'd say the use of IT to help create safeguards to ensure that we do not have incidents is that's kind of the key, is how do we have, you know, things that will have sensors to, you know, ensure we understand, as you said before, you know, how equipment is operating, or to do, you know, to detect if there are, you know, any emissions, and then so that we can take, you know, immediate action, and but mainly to prevent those types of things. So that is something that we look at. So in, whether it's a, you know, how we're designing, you know, say a facility that we're first putting it up to make sure that it's designed robustly, and we have automation to ensure that we have those safeguards in place, or it's through even the maintenance and, you know, as we are, say, folks are doing maintenance activities, that's automated, and they actually understand kind of what are the steps that they should take to perform maintenance, you know, in a quality and safe way. And so just a couple of examples, but that's something, you know, we have a very large health, environment, and safety group. And so then there's IT components, you know, to that to ensure that we do that in a quality way. IT can help bring more knowledge into the field. For instance, say, you know, if you think about from a digitization standpoint, instead of having the operating manual be an actual, like, physical manual, how do you give a person out in the field a handheld where they can easily go through and understand, you know, what it is they are working on? Or being able to have, say, like, remote experts. So if there is a area that they're not as familiar with, that in some ways you could phone a friend, you know, utilizing, you know, various devices to be able to have, you know, somebody kind of see what you see, right, and then to be virtually giving you kind of consulting advice. So it's more that we do not see it as, yeah, as a degradation that we're automating and people don't know what's being automated. It is to get the information into the hands of the field worker.
Interesting. So it's a fairly conservative in terms of impacting the workflow, but you try to make that existing workflow as efficient as possible, then just given the life safety impact of what happens.
Yeah, because we
presumably conservative in terms
we
of
we have to have knowledgeable, trained, experienced employees that are out in the field. That will not change. We may automate some things, but then you will still have that experienced worker. And it's just how do you make that experienced worker even more effective, you know, by giving them the information they need at their fingertips so that they can then do a quality and efficient job. But quality, safety comes first over anything. So we're not going to, you know, look at efficiency at the detriment of safety.
After safety, how do you view the IT organization? Is it more about efficiency, essentially improving processes and controlling costs, or is there a revenue-driving component to the IT organization as well? In other words, are you extracting the data and saying, you guys in marketing, whatever you want, should be doing something differently?
I believe there's both. And the way that we look at it, the efficiency piece really is focused on the IT assets that we run. So those IT assets, how can we run them, you know, as efficiently as possible? I think the revenue generating is on the innovation. And so it is in those pieces of what I, you know, what I talked about of being able to get, you know, information into the hands of whatever worker it is and to make them more intelligent, then that drives, you know, better decisions, which should ultimately lead to revenue. So it is a bit of a bimodal. We do want to make sure that the, you know, when we build IT tools, that we're building them as efficiently as possible. We're running them, you know, as efficiently as possible. But the innovation comes from the tools that we're building. What is that enabling? How is that helping the company to, you know, generate cash or earnings? So both focuses have to be there. We have to be disciplined, right? So you don't, you know, we don't want to have, you know, when you think about the overall kind of IT budget, we have to run it as a business as well, right? And so we need to look at, you know, our base business of the running of these assets and making sure that, you know, hey, how, are there more efficient ways? Like what automation can we put in, say, for patching of servers, you know, or for doing upgrades, you know, like just life cycle upgrades and applications. Like that's the piece where we look to get efficiency. And then from the innovation standpoint, it's really having our IT professionals really understanding the business areas that they are supporting and then being able to make the recommendations for the various solutions that we could deliver to help drive the business strategy of that area.
So one interesting thing that we talked about last time we saw each other, it's a movement into unconventionals for Chevron had actually been a very exciting avenue for deployment of the tough technologies that you manage. Maybe talk to us a little bit about what is unconventionals, what is the Permian Basin?
You know, as I talked about before, there are different kind of you know, basins, you know, where we operate, and then different asset classes. And the unconventional is one of those asset classes. And the Permian Basin is a place, you know, in the middle of, you know, kind of the country here in the U.S. And we have a very large acreage position there. And we're one of the, I think amongst the super majors, we have the largest kind of acreage position. And so our competitors are more independents. They're smaller, they're nimble, and so it it has caused us to think differently about, as a large company, how do we compete, you know, in that one area. And technology, both information technology as well as other types of technology, have played a great portion. Whether it's, you know, for us, you know, there's drilling technology, there's reservoir technology. But then there's also information technology. And how do we bring all of that together to ensure that we can be successful there? And you know, with these unconventionals, we call it, you know, it's a term called the factory model. And it's where you're drilling, you know, quite a bit, you know, kind of in series. And so you have to have speed of learning. And so as as you're drilling a well, need to understand, you know, was that well successful, was it not, how much did it cost, and then that learning needs to go very quickly to the next one. And so again, being able to pull together all that information, getting it back into the right folks' hands, whether it's the drilling engineer or the operations or the reservoir management, so that they can understand what is it that is either going well or that could be improved, so that they can then bake those learnings into the next one. And because it's a factory and you're kind of drilling in, you know, pretty rapid succession, the speed to which you do that analysis and make those decisions is crucial. And so it's a different one, like before, where we were talking about the crunching of this massive, you know, seismic data for, you know, the geological space. That's computing power. This one is just more of how do I combine information more quickly. So the information's always been out there, but the ability to actually combine it, to present that to our engineers, as opposed to them having to go look for it, combine it on their own, massage it, and then by the time they do the analysis, that data is old, and then we've probably also missed the opportunity on a number of wells to actually inflow. So I think that's really been the big thing because the margins are quite tight. And so you really look at both your operating costs as well as the production. And we obviously want the operating cost to go down, and we'd like our production to come up, and then you know are able to affect the margins.
So in a conventional environment, kind of what the image a lot of people I think would have in their mind is there's a lot of imagery work, et cetera, to find this one big deposit, container under the ground, essentially, and you basically drill once into it, and then you suck everything out, and then you're done. And it's, I'm simplifying, but it's sort of a find once, drill once, extract for, 10, 20 years, and then you're done, and you got to move on. But it seems like in the Permian Basin, where you're basically drilling where the oil, I'm assuming, is more diffuse through the entire area, so you basically are trying to find the right concentrations as you go along and drill in the right...
And the pace.
I see. I see. Interesting. So you're competing with what in the old movies they used to call wildcatters or something like that. And
A bit, but there's actually, and it's been quite interesting, I think there's been a bit of a digital war as well. I mean, if anybody can go out and Google the Permian Basin, and you will see that technology is being brought to bear. It's kind of a bit of a technology war that's happening. It's quite fascinating.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the wildcatters aren't. Yeah, they're just not going by intuition. They're using technology as well, and so it is that pace. It is how you implement and utilize the technology is also a big thing about winning in these unconventional spaces. So, and it is different technology. I mean, our industry, we sometimes get a bad rap that we're, kind of old, slow, and like not very technologically advanced. I mean, we've been using technology for, many, many, many decades, very complex technologies. Like I said, for us, technology means much broader. The various drilling technologies. We couldn't drill some of these wells either in the unconventional or the conventional without very advanced technology. The imaging, that we do with our seismic, we wouldn't be able to find, this oil and gas without a lot of that technology. But for us, it's now the merger of the technologies, of what we would call the petrotechnical technologies with the information technology, merging that together to really be able to, have scale and pace.
So what people, I guess, frequently refer to as IT and OT, right? The information and operational technology. Let's say Chevron decides to do something in a particular location of a Permian Basin. To what extent is the choice of the equipment they make influenced by you saying, that's great equipment, we can't process, it doesn't have the right data, it doesn't give us the right data, it's hard to connect to. Is there interaction like that?
Not quite that, because again, if we go back to what I was saying about the history of our industry, our equipment, we've had sensors on our equipment
forever.
Right. And so when you think about kind of the Internet of Things or industrial Internet of Things, whatever you want to call it, in a lot of other industries, it's about getting the sensors there. For us, it's been more that we've had the sensors there forever. It's just how do we actually connect, as you were saying, the OT to the IT, or like our operational network to our business network? Because we have been, again, from a safety standpoint, again, we have always had a demarcation, a separation, because our operations network is hardened in a very different way. Than our business network, and we've kept it separated. And now it's how do we, bring the two together and that data together in a safe, secure, and speedy way. That's what I had referred to before. In the past, it's been, the data's there. We've had a lot of data. The data comes across, it kind of gets dumped somewhere, and then it's been our engineers who, instead of doing the analysis, they're doing data manipulation.
I see.
So it's really, how do we turn that data into valuable information automatically and not have our engineers doing that manually? So that's been the big thing for us, between the kind of the combination of the IT and the OT.
Interesting, interesting. It is fascinating at the conference in Vegas that we were together a few weeks ago when I was preparing for it. It really struck me that in the last 20 years, whenever the word data has come up, data warehouse, all the way through big data, AI, et cetera, no matter what generation you're talking about, 90% of the effort is just trying to get the data cleaned up in the right place, connected with each other. Do people not even understand what we were measuring when we collected the data? And then there's a tiny little bit that comes in at the end where somebody actually gleans an insight out of it. It sounds like it's still substantially a big part of the challenge.
No, definitely. And you know, as you said, we've had these sensors, the OT out there, so we've been collecting data forever, but it's like, how much of it have we been using? And so that's really where we're at now, is like, let's actually use more of this. And then it is the connection of data. So, you know, again, connecting, say, the drilling data that's coming off the drill bit, you know, with financial or procurement data to, again, be able to make those analytical decisions. You know, in the past, you know, were we actually using all of the data coming off of the drill bit? Probably not. And then were we combining it? Maybe or maybe not. But it is the insights. And that's what I mean about, you know, providing the ability for our workforce to be more intelligent. Because it's like, let's have the engineer do the job that we hired the engineer for, which is analyzing and designing. We really don't want our engineers spending time looking for, finding, and massaging data. Like that is not the, you know, the high order of skills.
That's right.
You know, that's a low level task. Like, so how can we let the computer do that for them and then get them to the higher order of the work that they were trained for?
And you know what's interesting too is a lot of the artificial intelligence concepts that we come across, what's fascinating, there's a couple different ways they're doing it, but when you look into the under the hood, quite a few of them are really, what they're really doing is cross-application data integration.
When you think of, you know, artificial intelligence of truly mimicking the brain, we're not there because we don't even understand how our own brains work. And I think, you know, once we get that, I think that's when you'll get more towards, I guess, the true definition of artificial intelligence. That's why I've said several times that I do think that really when we talk about artificial intelligence now, is it's more about how do you make your worker more intelligent? You know, how do you let the computer do a lot of this combining, and so that you give that, you know, give the information in the way that the worker can consume it and it makes them more intelligent. So that is, you know, you are artificially increasing their intelligence. I mean, that's the way that I kind of think about it.
So in your view, it's an enhancement of human intelligence rather than necessarily replacement.
Exactly.
It's interesting because I think that's a very insightful way of describing it in the sense that it ties to what works, what we've seen works in these startups and some of these other entities, which is the following. Whoever the vendor is, better understand the workflow extremely well.
Exactly.
Because otherwise you're just burning up compute power and delivering, once again, a bunch of data to people. What part of it is more than that? When you're trying to make your worker more intelligent, is it also trying to suggest things they wouldn't have thought about even doing before? Is that where you're trying to push it as well, or right now?
No, that's correct.
Okay.
Because it's those insights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because some of the things, when you combine, say, data sets that have never been combined before, you're not exactly sure what results you're going to get out. And so, you know, you look at this combined data and you potentially start thinking a different way, and perhaps that actually transforms that workflow. And so that I think that's also the trick as well, is how, you know, do you, you know, work in an environment that really fosters that innovation, and that you may or may not know what the end answer is going to be, but let's see what insights we get and let the insights kind of guide you towards what the transformation is.
You know, what's really fascinating about that answer, Alicia, is a few years ago when we started our IoT conference, most organizations would say, you know what, we want to have a specific question we're trying to answer, that we're not going to really pay for discovery. Mm-hmm. But the percentages are changing. There are more organizations are saying, you know what, maybe we will, obviously not in an unbounded fashion, but in a much more expansive fashion than we used to, see maybe on an unsupervised basis, essentially, whether the application of some of these data analysis techniques can point to trends and features and clustering in the data that we hadn't really bothered even looking for before. Is that something you see yourself in your organization as well?
Yeah, and I think the key to what you said is it's not unbounded. There is an area that we are exploring. I think what you mentioned, it's being open for the secondary or tertiary insights that you get out of that kind of the area. So leaving it open a bit, not having it, your aperture so narrow that you're only answering this very narrow question. But you do have to understand kind of what space you're working in. And so that's kind of then our, I guess, path that we've been following.
I'm sure you get solicited a lot by vendors, traditional or new, that say, we've got AI, we've got ML, supervised, unsupervised, you know, all this stuff. What does that mean to you? What's been exciting? Somebody who's listening to the startup, who's into this podcast from a startup as a venture investor, would like to sell stuff to you. Just what actually from your experience seems to be working?
Well, you know, and you mentioned it a bit ago, it is really the understanding of the workflow. Mm-hmm. And so to anybody that's out there listening, I think doing some research, you know, on our industry and really understanding kind of what are some of our challenges and having those, you know, maybe even the fresh eyes looking at it. Because that's always one thing that we do is how do you potentially look outside of our industry to other industries to some learnings that they've had and how can you bring it back? I think those have been some of the interesting things. You know, because sometimes you have to get out, you know, you have to get out of your own head. But I also think on the flip side of that, for folks that are trying to sell into our industry, you do have to learn a bit about, you know, our industry. But you can come in with those fresh eyes and say, hey, did you think about this, this, and this? And we could have a blind spot there that we weren't. And so, you know, for us, you know, we definitely have, you know, we have an R&D arm within Chevron. And so we have folks that are out, you know, researching. There are problems that we can't solve. And so we're looking to partner with others to help us solve those problems and then bring that kind of back in to the larger organization to see, you know, where it's applicable. And it work, you know, so that works really well because we have, you know, kind of like their internal consultants, right? And I think the piece that makes them very effective is that they do understand the different parts of our value chain. And then there are mechanisms for, you know, having the feedback on areas where, like, we would really like to be able to do this, but we can't right now. And the can't may be from a technical standpoint. It also could be from a commercial standpoint. And can technology help with the commerciality of a specific thing that we're trying to do? Because the current technology, it's, hey, if that's not even, I could go and get that oil and gas, or I could manufacture X, Y, and Z, but commercially, it just doesn't make sense. And so then what can technology, you know, bring to bear to change even the commercial outcome?
Right. I know in healthcare, for example, they realized that going to people who were developed natural language processing mm-hmm. technologies for the smartphone environment do much better than their current vendors trying to come at it from inside the healthcare industry. So that's probably a number of examples. Similar mm-hmm. type of thing for you. What in the end would you like us to add or focus on?
Well, I think what I'd end with is, you know, really understanding that, you know, our industry is quite exciting. And the value that we provide to the world is immense. You know, we do it in a very safe and ethical manner. And I do think that sometimes, you know, folks that are looking for industries to work in, specifically in IT, do not think of the energy industry to work in. The scale and the scope of things that you could work on in our industry are massive. As I said, the impact, the positive impact that you can have to the world. You know, there's, you know, some parts of the world they don't even have, you know, access to an energy. And so being able to be part of helping you know, a country move from third world into first world. I mean, that's real, you know, human impact. And the things that we're doing now, this combination of the OT and the IT, it's just a fascinating and exciting time to be in IT in this company. And, you know, not only the scale and scope, as we talked about, but then if you like to travel, you know, go around, or, you know, as I said, we have operations all over the world. And so, which is why I've stayed with the company so long. I mean, I've been here for the 27 years. I've had, I think I'm on my 13th or 14th different role. And those roles have differed from a technology standpoint. They've differed from, you know, the value chain standpoint, and they've also differed from the geographic standpoint. And so all those things, I think, make for very exciting, meaningful, and impactful work. So hopefully you'll dig in a bit more to our industry, and, you know, those of you that have startups, that you'll learn more about us and maybe call us up and see if we can partner together. And those of you that might be looking for a career change, you know, think about coming into the energy industry.
Great. Thank you so much. We really appreciate all the time and all the insights.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed our conversation.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Tech, cars, machines. Subscribe here or at gtkpartners.com.